Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode.
It's not necessarily about the percentage that you own. It's the dollar value tied to it. And we use the trite example all the time of, would you like to be 1% owner of Google?
We've been misled to believe that dentistry, more specifically the dental business, has to be complicated. Dentistry can be simple, and dentistry should be simple. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Dentistry Made Simple podcast. Our goal on this podcast is pretty simple. We want to help you take control of your practice, your finances, and your future. This week, I have what I believe is going to be an amazing conversation. I have a returning guest, Perrin Desportes, and we're going to talk about buy-ins, partnerships, and specifically speaking, we're going to talk about something that's become an issue for me and should be an issue for many of you, I hope, is that what do you do when you get a practice that's at a pretty significant size? How do you start looking at models to create partnerships so that you can keep long-term associates and continue to grow your practice? So Perrin, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Tarun. It's good to be back on with you. I feel like it's been too long since we last talked about the world of group practices and M&As, but associate equity and partnerships are, I'll say, something near and dear to me. We do a lot of them at Polaris, and a lot of what we do at Polaris, I learned working for a Fortune 1000 company, Patterson Dental Supply, for 15 years. So this is right in my wheelhouse, and I'm really looking forward to sharing some information with you.
Well, you know, this is the beauty of social media. I saw a reel that you did that talked about this stuff, and you used a lot of letters, okay? That's the only thing that I would tell you is a lot of letters there. And I was like, I don't understand some of those things. I'm like, let me reach out to Perrin directly and ask some questions. And so let me kind of frame this, if you don't mind, okay?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you have a traditional practice, you know, that practice that's doing, let's call it anywhere from $600,000 to $700,000, maybe even up to $1.5 million, maybe even $1.8 million. You know, the exit from that is relatively straightforward, and or the partnership is pretty straightforward. The challenge comes in for myself and for many of the people that we're working with in our mastermind is we're trying to build larger single location practices, and most of them are owner 100% owned, and they become associate dependent practices. And when you get a good associate, you want to maintain them. You want to reward them. The challenge becomes is when you built a business that's $3 million, $4 million, $5 million, getting somebody to fork over the cash to buy in at 50% is pretty significant. And or somebody that says, hey, I can buy $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, but then no, who really wants a 10%, 12% equity stake? So really, practices like mine, we're stuck in a significantly difficult situation. So, Perrin, walk us through what the traditional model is and these earned equity models that have me so intrigued.
Yeah. So, thanks for the opportunity again to be with you and your audience today, Tarun. I think what you are building and what your audience is probably made up of in terms of business owners is a phenomenon that we're seeing more and more of now, which is the larger footprint solo practice. It's 10 operatories, 20 operatories. I have one in Florida that's 38 shares under one roof, multi-specialty and stuff. I mean, those businesses feel more like a small group practice of a sort in terms of revenue volume, number of chairs, number of providers, number of hours, all that kind of good stuff. So this is not your traditional five operatory, $800,000 revenue general dentistry practice that we saw in the early stages of my career and yours, all right? So there are people that are building larger businesses that value much more highly. They're more dynamic, and they have some challenges to them because when you start with somebody like yourself, the founder who took the risk, had the vision to build this thing, you don't want to start turning over associates. That's bad for cash flow. It's bad for patient continuity. You invest a lot in your associates to get them from a clinical technique standpoint to be able to do a lot more complicated types of dentistry. The last thing you want to do is lose them. Actually, the last thing you want to do is compete with them.
Right.
But you would rather keep them on the reservation, right? And you may have, depending on the amount of capacity, you may have several worthy associates. So historically, you're right, partnership and to a degree, practice transition was, I'm going to work for Dr. Agarwal. I'm going to be his associate. I'm going to buy 50% of the practice in a handful of years. I'm going to buy the other 50% when he wants to retire. That was Tarun's built-in transition plan. Banks loved it. Continuity of the business, maintaining cash flows. I'm going to learn how to do all the procedures from you. So it's de-risk from the bank standpoint of me being able to do the dentistry. It all works. Well, that's really different when now you have a business that might value at $3 million, $4 million, $5 million, or a lot more than that. I'm probably not going to be able to borrow the money from a bank, at least not in one fell swoop, to become your 50-50 partner. And if there's more than one of me in your business, what does that start to look like? Couple with the fact that if I'm relatively early in my career, I'm probably carrying a lot of student loan debt from dental school. I probably just started a family and bought my first house and replaced a car and all that kind of fun stuff, right? And I'm kind of levered at that point. A bank, even if they would lend me $1 million to buy in, I don't know that's really what I want to do on my shoulders right now. But I don't want to be just an associate. I want to become a partner. So traditional buy-ins are still, there's still a place for them.
Yep.
You know, we do a healthy amount of them. They can be the right tool in the toolbox in given circumstances. If you are a large footprint, when I say large footprint, just think like, I don't know how many operatories you have.
Let's call it 10 operatories plus, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and you're generating that kind of revenue. It's a high productivity type business. Maybe if you have two associates, you want to think about them each buying into the business to the tune of 20% a piece or something like that. So they get a firm foothold in the business. They probably qualify for a loan that the bank would be willing to lend them and that they'd be comfortable with personally guaranteeing. And it allows you to take some chips off the table if you want to. Kind of secures the business for the long haul, but still doesn't solve the exit in its entirety, but it brings them into the ownership of the business. That's the traditional buy-in. Again, can be the right thing at the right place at the right time, but you probably need more than one of them for a business as valuable as yours. So for your audience that has these higher revenue businesses that are probably going to be more valuable, the first question for the owner or the founder is, how many associates do you have and how many of them do you want to bring into the ownership ranks to allow it to be done through bank funds?
So the challenge I hear, Perrin, in the traditional model is, let's say my business is worth $4 million, which is probably pretty close to true at this point in time. For my associates to buy 20% each, they still have to go get $800,000 in loan, which is still a lot of money for each of them. Especially given the scenario, your scenario you laid out is almost exactly true, is new family, new kid, still in school debt, new home, luckily not a new car yet, But, you know, those things add up to your, you know, your debt to income ratio. And at some point in time, banks are smart. And then they may ask me to sign on the dotted line, and I'm definitely not going to do that. So let's say the associates come to me and say, you know what, that's not a great option. That doesn't work for me. Is there another option available?
Yeah. So in again, small groups, large and small groups, or larger footprint practices like yours that generate more revenue, you have some options in terms of what we call earned equity models. And these are very commonplace in corporate America. You know that I worked for Patterson for 15 years, and I was in a leadership role, general manager, and ran three different businesses for them. I was the beneficiary of something called restricted stock units. Everybody's heard of stock options in corporate America. A stock option, I have to write the company a check to buy, essentially, at a discounted rate. Restricted stock is a grant, all right? The company is going to give you ownership in the business. However, it's performance-based. Patterson's a great company, but they're not that benevolent, right?
Nobody should be, right?
No, exactly. Even though they're publicly traded and you think that publicly traded companies can get away with anything, that's not the case. So they want to make sure that the people that they're allowing to earn equity through restricted stock units are high performers, for one, that mine the bottom line in terms of profitability and are going to increase the value of the company, and they're going to do it over a long period of time. All right. So this is not a, here's a grant to Tarun, spike the football, cash it in and walk away. No, there's a retention mechanism. If a company grants you the ability to become an owner through an earned equity model, there's something called a vesting schedule. Vesting simply means that I'm giving you a grant, but it's not all yours today. It becomes yours gradually over some period of time. For Patterson, it was 10 years. In the people we work with, it's usually a five-year vesting schedule.
So what I'm hearing, sorry to interrupt, Perrin, I just want to make sure that I'm actually intently listening here, okay? So you're talking about restricted stock units as one option, okay, where I grant my associate some stock in the company, but they don't get all of that stock all at once. They get it over a period of time. And your suggestion over 5 years, is that all at once in 5 years, or is it a percentage year by year typically?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family, T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
Yeah, so this is, it's gradual. It's the latter part. But let me see if I can verbalize this for your audience without confusing people, okay? So I mentioned that it's an earned equity award.
Okay.
It's performance-based, all right? So the stock, the opportunity to have the stock be worth something, is based in restricted stock units. It's based on my shoulders. It's performance driven. And for associates, that's usually collections oriented. It's what he or she can kind of control. It's the outcome they're most tied to, right? So what we do is we look at your average associate, if there is such a thing, and we say that the bar for average performance, I'm just going to make up some numbers.
Let's call it $600,000 a year.
Yeah. Okay. So $600,000 a year is average performance. We don't want to reward average performance.
That's correct.
Right? So we want to set the bar a little bit higher. You're still going to pay them if they do average performance, but they're not going to earn equity in the business.
Okay.
So maybe the bar is set at, let's say, $800,000. So they got to chin to a higher bar to get this additional benefit. And every dollar above $800,000, the goal, they get 20 cents on the dollar in company stock in addition to their compensation.
Okay, so they would get paid the normal percentage of the 800K. Okay.
Yep.
And then even let's say I did 900,000. So there's $100,000 in excess. I would still get my associate pay on that $100,000.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I would get 20 cents on every dollar. So in this case, $20,000.
In company stock. That's right.
Company stock.
And that $20,000 would vest over, in most cases, 5 years.
5 years.
So that's this year. Now, we want the company to continue to perform, right? We want it to continue to grow and be more valuable. So they have the opportunity to earn another award next year. Okay. Same principle, but the goal goes up slightly each year. So maybe from 800,000, it goes up by 5% or something, 20 cents on every dollar above that, and on and on and on.
So if you have a big year, you can get a lot of stock.
Absolutely. We see that a lot. I don't want to say that we see a lot of associates who are sandbagging,
right?
But magically, you know, you put an additional benefit like this that they don't have to come out of pocket for, and they can become an owner over time. And lo and behold, this associate that was doing 600, 650, 660, something like that, magically sees the light of God and produces $900,000 the next year, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool phenomenon, though, because it's they feel tied to it. It vests gradually over a period of time. If they miss it this year, they can come back and try to hit it again next year. So they're not one and done. You know, we want them to earn equity in the business, but only if they help us improve the business.
Especially if it's a grant. So, it's a gift, in a sense,
yes,
right? So absolutely.
Yeah. So restricted stock is usually an individual type of an award like that, where it's based on his or her collections. And like I said, we model them out over about a 10-year period, because that would be the equivalent if they took on a loan from the bank, you know, to try to create an outcome. The other earned equity award.
I have one question, Perrin.
Say
you earn 20 cents on each dollar above the goal in company stock. Is there a preset value to this stock option or to stock value?
Yes. So it's you know, you and I recognize it as a share price.
Okay.
If we go and buy a share of Apple or Google or something, right? So when we build these models, you can imagine they're kind of complex. We establish the valuation of the company. It's an EBITDA-based valuation. And then we figure out the number of shares available to come up with a share price and what it is right here, right now, today. Okay. And then when the business moves forward, let's hope that the business is improving in performance and the valuation goes up. So the share price goes up. Okay. So this is the rising tide that lifts your boat. You go from being 100% owner to something slightly less than that in an earned equity model, but the value of your holdings go up at a faster rate than the dilution is. And for the associates, again, it's their benefit that they didn't have to write a check for any of it, but they're becoming an owner in the business over the long haul.
So in theory, in 5 to 10 years, they could become 20% owner of the business, theoretically.
Depending
or a little bit less, probably.
It's probably less. Okay. Here's that would be a pretty aggressive outcome, I would say. Most of the time when we build these for groups, we're aiming for somewhere, you know, depending on how big and how valuable the group is, it could be anywhere from something as low as 2 or 3% up to around 10%.
Okay.
Here's what I would tell you, though, and this sort of statement holds true whether it's an earned equity award or a buy-in. The 20% example I used before, the two associates that might buy each 20% of your business. People think about partnership in a traditional means in dentistry, which is 50-50 partners.
Right.
right? That's when you say partnership, that's the first thing that comes to a young associate's mind. And that's what they drill into them in dental school, because in dentistry, you still can own part of, some of, all of your own business. Okay. And that's a good thing. It's not necessarily about the percentage that you own. It's the dollar value tied to it. And we use the trite example all the time of, would you like to be 1% owner of Google? Hey,
oh, yeah.
Right? It's the dollar value. It's not the percentage. Yeah. So from an associate standpoint, whether it's a buy-in or an earn-in, it's less about the percentage versus the dollar value of it. From your perspective, or a founder's perspective, who took the risk to build a business that suffered all the sleepless nights and guaranteed all the loans and all that fun stuff, right? That we all don't like talking about. From the founder's perspective, here's the drill. If you took the risk to build and own and operate the business, you want to maintain voting control of the business.
Absolutely.
And so when we work with a client like you to set up one of these models for your associates, we're trying to balance a couple of things. We're trying to balance what the associates' needs and expectations and desires are, but we're trying to maintain an outcome for our founder that allows him or her not to get voted off their own island until they're ready, okay? And that's typically, there's several different echelons of voting control in an operating agreement. The operating agreement is the legal document between partners in terms of how the business is governed, set up by a law firm, obviously, but we guide a lot of that process. So there's day-to-day decision-making control that you're going to have as the founder. You don't need to take a vote if you want to change the toilet paper in the building to something else, or change supply companies or something like that, right? We don't need to take a vote on that. If you decide that you want to take on a loan and encumber the business and buy and build another Raleigh Dental Arts somewhere else, that probably does require a vote. And it might be simple majority, 51%, or it might be super majority, which is usually somewhere between about 70 and 80%. What you want to do is maintain super majority voting control when and where you can, whether it's a buy-in or an earn-in. And that protects your ability, Tarun's ability, to govern the business and do what you want in the coming years and not have your minority partners essentially balk at it.
Right. Now that's okay. Yeah. All right. So that's the restricted stock units. Okay. And so one
RSUs.
RSUs. One more question on that. So in this situation, I preset the stock prices, let's call it January 1, 2024. And each year, the stock price gets reassessed based on the formulation that's used, and then they get they can earn up to 20% of the above number at that new established share price. So there's no funny business, no hanky panky going on. It's all preset. It's essentially run like a publicly traded company in terms of valuation. It's a little bit different. I mean, that's called legalized gambling.
It's not publicly traded, right. But you've got to be able to do what's known as a capitalization table update every year for all parties.
Okay.
So that means, you know, for those who have earned equity awards like an RSU each year, did they hit it? Yes or no? If they did, how much did they exceed the goal? How do we calculate the number of shares that they earned? And where are they in the vesting schedule in prior years? So that annual update establishes share price, valuation of the company, past year's performance. It's called a waterfall as it relates to the vesting and everything. Yeah.
Does this entitle them to profit dividends, or does this entitle them to only share increase, and then they only get a windfall when and if they exit from that?
So it's a really good question. There are basically three predominant what we call rights and privileges around equity. One is ownership in the business. It's equity, right? If you sell it and I'm a 1% owner, I'm entitled to 1% of the proceeds. There's voting rights and distribution rights, which are the other two. Those, it kind of depends upon the legal structure of the business, but those are decisions that you do have to make when shares vest or at the beginning of the program. Are we going to allow for them to have access to distributions as well as voting rights? What I would tell you is the vast majority, I can't think of one that hasn't been this way, but maybe there has been. I think if you're going to allow somebody to earn equity in the business, then tell them they don't get a vote. That's kind of shoddy, right? Honestly. So we encourage the shares to have voting rights. Distribution, I would also advocate that they have distribution rights. Now, one of your decisions as the managing member of the company is, are we going to declare distributions this month, this quarter, this year? Yeah. Or are we going to recycle cash for growth purposes? So if you do declare distributions, and I'm a 1% partner, you have to decide, yeah, how much are we going to distribute? And for whatever we do, Perrin's entitled to 1%.
Okay. That sounds very fair. Yeah. As long as I get the control. Like, I may want to invest in upgrading all my equipment or XYZ, and I don't want to take a distribution this year as a business. I may want to reinvest it all into any X number of things,
And when we represent clients as a sell side advisor in the group practice space, you know, distributions versus recycling cash is a really big point of most of the value of transactions. Because if our owners, if our clients are accustomed to pulling a lot of the cash out of the business to supplement their personal income, and they elect to take a transaction from an enterprise level DSO that does not declare distributions because they want to recycle the cash to buy more practices and grow the equity of it. Distributions are an income play. Recycling cash for growth purposes is an equity play.
Right.
And those are two different things. So it is something to consider for sure.
Okay. All right. So restricted stock units, that's an earned income model. Okay.
Earned equity model.
Earned equity model. Thank you for correcting me. An earned equity model through restricted stock units. And then you are going to go into another option on this earned equity model.
Yeah, there's a second one called profits interest units. And profits interest units can work really well in a single practice or a de novo, a new practice. I don't want to get too wonky on all this because there is the right tool in the toolbox given somebody's current business, their future desires, and what the ultimate outcomes are. So these are not interchangeable parts. And, you know, just like you have a high-speed handpiece and a low-speed handpiece, they do different things, you know, and they have different applications. You would want to choose the right methodology. But profits interest units might be something where if your business, let's stick with your business for a second. And let's say that you had no desire to add additional locations. You were solely focused on where you are. And you kind of felt like the business is close to or at maximum value in terms of profitability and everything. So to allow your associate or associates a profits interest unit, it might look something to the following. Hey, Perrin, you do a great job as an associate. We're here 4 days a week, maximizing patient time and everything. The value of the company is $4 million. If you want to bring on another associate and tutor them and open up a Friday and a Saturday to expand days and hours, and you can help me drive this business from $4 million in valuation to, say, $6 million in valuation without you having to work the Fridays and Saturdays, that's on me and somebody else, then I'm willing to split that $2 million increase in valuation with you. 50-50, 60-40, 80-20, something like that. The split is something we need to define, and it's unique on a case-by-case basis. But the opportunity there is for me to become an equity holder in the business. Again, it's performance-driven to create a more valuable company than what you've been able to create up to this point on your own. And it's great for businesses that are at or near max value, where the founder and the owner doesn't want to work harder for longer, but really wants to unlock greater value through the efforts of some younger, more motivated associates. So a little bit of a different construct, but again, can be the right tool in the toolbox if it's put together correctly.
So when would that be the right tool outside of, like, can you give some more concrete examples or scenarios on that?
So for example, one of the scenarios we see a lot is in the group practices we work with, more and more of them are employing a de novo approach, meaning a build from the ground up versus an acquisition. Yeah. So let's say that Raleigh Dental Arts is now going to, you've found the perfect location for the second second business. You are going to fund either the build out or the renovation, the equipment and all that. And let's say that you put $1 million into that location.
Yeah.
I've been working with you as an associate for a while. I've learned under Tarun Agarwal, I can do all the complicated stuff, and I'm also a good business leader. You want me to be your anchor doctor in location number two, okay? But you're going to fund the build out to $1 million. You also have the brand, Raleigh Dental Arts, the systems, the processes, and you're going to maybe send one of your top assistants, one of your top hygienists, and maybe an up-and-coming office manager into location number two, but I'm going to be the lead doctor. So we would work with you to establish a threshold of valuation in location number two. You put $1 million in to build it out. You got a lot of other systems, processes, secret sauce of Raleigh Dental Arts that I'm going to be the beneficiary of. So maybe we set a threshold of valuation at $2 million in location number two. Every dollar of valuation from zero to $2 million accrues to Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Okay. Yeah. Everything above that that Perrin can help you drive in location number two without you having to set foot in there, we're going to split 50-50. Okay. So maybe in a couple of years' time, I drive this business you know, to a valuation level of $4 million, just like the core Raleigh Dental Arts business is. If you decide to sell the whole kit and caboodle at that point, that location where I'm your anchor doctor sells for $4 million. The first two goes to you. You took the risk to start it up, put all the money in. The second $2 million in valuation, we split. Million to me, million to you, because you couldn't have gotten that business to that level of value without me. But I didn't put any money in, so I'm not down to dollar one on it. Okay. So it's a great shared equity, and it helps increase alignment. In a de novo scenario, you really do need somebody driving the business to improve performance.
Is there distributions in this PIU model?
There is a way to calculate distributions as well. The likelihood is that the initial distributions up to some threshold of established value would accrue to you to help offset the cost of the loan. Okay. And then if there are distributions above and beyond that, they're shared 50-50 beyond that initial level. Yeah.
Okay. So in other words, I'm going to get paid first. And then once I'm paid off, then there's money that can be split based on whatever 50-50, 80-20, 70-30, whatever the number turns out to be.
Yeah, whatever the split is. And that we run fairly complicated models to that effect as well to kind of forecast, hey, what do we think the likelihood of this location, what do we think it's going to turn out to be? You know, and we're trying to forecast that 5 to 10 years out in the future. The profits interest unit also has a vesting schedule to it. So if I drive this thing from zero to $4 million in valuation in 2 years, you know, and then I want to spike the football and leave. Well, I'm not fully vested at that point. So, I'd only be cutting my nose off to spite my face. So the key is in earned equity awards, be it restricted stock or profits interest, the retention mechanism is really important for the founders of the business. You don't want a high performing associate to really just throw up gaudy numbers and then then leave and you have to pay them out. Yeah.
Okay. All right. What's in it? Okay, I think I know the answer, but I want to ask it. What's in it for the associate to do this versus going to buy their own practice, a smaller practice, or what's in it for them? Why would they go down this, what on the surface can seem and look a much more complicated method than the traditional buy-in or traditional buy-out model?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into Full Arch Implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and all-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3d-dentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
Yeah, so I think when they're contemplating going it alone, like leaving you and actually borrowing money to buy or build their office, there are some people who are predisposed to be the king of the kingdom, and that's okay. I mean, you were that way when you came out.
100%,
you
know? I'm that way.
Yeah, and there's obviously nothing wrong with that. There's still a good segment of the population that wants to have their hands on the wheel and wants to drive the bus. That being said, the business of dentistry is changing a lot, and there are a lot more competitive pressures on you today as a business owner, a practice owner, versus what there were when you started out.
100%.
And I don't think that's going to recede anytime in the near future. It's arguably only going to get worse if that's the way you look. Yeah. Yeah. So I think for those that are contemplating being part of something bigger than myself versus going it alone, it's becoming fewer and fewer, and the ADA statistics would back that up too. So when I'm thinking as the associate, when I'm thinking about buy-in versus earn-in, it really comes down to a couple of things. One, what is my personal financial position? You know, am I comfortable borrowing a sizable amount of money to buy into a really valuable business, especially if I'm not a 50-50 partner? Or is it maybe something where I want to borrow a little bit of money to buy some stock in the company today that is mine? I become a partner, maybe 5%. And then I want to earn in another 5% or 10% over the next 10 years and become a more material owner of the business without having to borrow all of it. It's a matter of cash flow at a personal level at the end of the day. And obviously for the founders of the business, it kind of comes back to that. How many associates do I have? And ultimately, if I want them all to be participating in the ownership of the business, you know, how do I protect myself from still having control of the organization?
Okay. Is there a minimum size or number of associates that this becomes viable? Because I'm assuming there's some cost and complexity to create all of this. What would be the threshold, do you think, that somebody should start considering restricted stock units or profit interest units?
Yeah.
That's right. RSUs and PIUs. That's it. Okay.
There you go.
At what point would it be behoove somebody to actually seriously consider this?
Yeah. So I think you're probably, this is sort of spitball numbers, but it's probably somewhere around, I don't know, $1.5 million to $2 million at a minimum in terms of revenue in the business.
Okay.
Because if I'm just kind of like working numbers backwards from there, you got to have a business that generates enough profitability or EBITDA to value highly enough to warrant it. All right. And if you don't, there's nothing wrong with that, but it probably a traditional buy-in is more appropriate. And it's also at a lower valuation level that an associate would qualify for, a 50% loan or something like that.
Right.
You know, so if you're $1.5 million to $2 million in revenue and north of that, the next question becomes truly, what is the valuation of the company and what is the future valuation expected to be? Is there, have you just maxed out the business? There's not another dime of revenue or profitability to be gained of it. It's at max value and there's nowhere for it to go from here. Or is it, hey, you know, there, we may have maxed out our current facility, but I can blow out a wall and go next door and add a couple of operatories several times over, or I can add days and hours. You know, there are things like that to really unlock more value than just what it's situated as right now. For those businesses that are like yours, that are, you know, 10 operatories generating $3 to $4 million in revenue, I think you have several different options, different tools in the toolbox. Ultimately, it comes down to how many associates do you have and what do we want the end-all outcome for them to be.
Okay. And what's in it for me as the owner outside of keeping people? Like, well, what else do I get out of that?
That's 1A, B, and C, right? It's a point of stability, and being able to kind of de-risk your position a little bit from the sleepless nights. What if they want to leave and go do their own thing or get recruited away? It also, I think it builds in the possibility of a future transition plan if you want it. Not saying that you would have to sell.
What would that look like?
Well, it might be something like if I go back to, let's say you have two associates and you wanted each of them to buy in or earn in up to a 15 to 20% number. So you would still have 60 to 70% okay. And they would have each, let's just say 20%. You know, at that point or at the point in the future where they've either paid down the loan a bit that they borrowed to buy 20%, we're 5 to 6 years into the future and Tarun wants to sell another 20% tranche to each one of them. You can do an incremental sale over time, or it could be something where obviously Raleigh's a really hot market. Your business would value really, really highly. Maybe you want to take it to, and maybe you're not the you're working minimally clinically in the business at that point. So it's not dependent upon your clinical skills. Maybe it's something where you want to take chips off the table and stay in an administrative or a doctor development capacity. And you want to, you know, Raleigh Dental Arts to be under the umbrella of a larger DSO that can maximize your teaching talents to their clinical development program. And it would still benefit your two associates from a dollar payout as well. So locked into either strategy.
That was going to be my question. So this, like the way I would think about this is I could structure something like this for my two associates that I do love and want to keep. And then we could build the business a little bit more over the next couple of years. And then we could look to PE or a group model, a DSO model. And then the valuation, obviously, in those models is typically higher than your valuation would be in this model. And so there's the growth potential right there. Like, I think every practice has some level of growth potential because they can get bought out by somebody that's willing to pay a higher EBITDA multiple at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, that's potentially right. I mean, assuming that the business stays glued together and that the key providers in the business are willing to continue on with the parent company, for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you'd probably do something at not a discounted valuation for your associates to buy in, but not at what we call a market, not a market sale rate either. You know, you try to say, hey, look, this is a valuable business we've built here. You've been instrumental. Both of you have been instrumental in that. I want you to become partners. You know, we're going to establish the valuation at, you know, 5x EBITDA or something like that. It's a little bit below market rate. But in a couple of years after we've improved the business, maybe we can bring it to market. It values really, really highly and sells for 8x EBITDA. So it's like kind of the IPO on an issuance of stock type of a scenario. And that's, you know, that's appealing to them because they feel like they have a great stake in the future of the business. And look, if they help you build it up to a greater level of performance, they're going to reap a pretty nice reward as well. And still have probably a very good future ahead of them. So yeah, it can definitely facilitate all that.
What all is involved in setting this stuff up? Clearly, I'm not, somebody like me is not, even myself is not going to do this myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be it would be a challenge, even for you.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think there's at some point you want a fairly objective third party to be the one to stand behind their methodology.
Right.
Not like Tarun's home cooking here, you know? So I think we, you know, you would want somebody to build the valuation model of the company. And for us, that's an EBITDA-based valuation because EBITDA is the marker for valuation in group practices. And so that's kind of what we do. So you have the valuation of the company presently, and obviously the production levels of all the providers in question. Then we think about what the future outcome of the business may be: expanded days, expanded hours, additional productivity of average performing associates, improvement in profitability, blah, 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 blah. We're trying to forecast what the true upside of the business is. And then at that point, it's determining, is it a buy-in? Is it an earn-in? Is it a hybrid of both? Like, what's the right tool in the toolbox, right? That gets them to a level that they would feel meritorious of it, you know? Along that path, that's probably 60 to 90 days that I just described in terms of getting data, building, you know, the model, pressure testing it, and all that kind of fun stuff. We work with the accountant and the law firm, or bring either or both in if you need it, to establish accounting considerations and financial reporting considerations for the methodology we're going to use, as well as the legal contracts and award agreements necessary to sew the whole thing together, and then present it to the associates on your behalf in a about a 4 to 5 hour strategic planning session on, you know, a little bit about what's going on in the industry, you know, what's in it for them in terms of the opportunity at hand here. And then, okay, guys, how are we going to maximize the value moving forward as partners? And that's kind of a cool day together. But the whole thing takes probably 90 to 120 days. You need probably a consulting company like us to do part of it. You might need involvement from an accountant to do a little bit, and you certainly need the attorney to draft what we're proposing to them in legal form.
To legalize the document. I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's unbelievably interesting to someone like me, because I do believe that when you hit $3, $4, $5 million in revenue, for sure, there's minimal choices available to people. And I would like to keep associates, and I would like to have them have a vested interest in seeing everything grow. I mean, nobody wants to buy something and keep stagnant. That nobody wins in that scenario. I don't want to give it away or sell part of it and keep everything stagnant. I want my 50% to be worth almost what 100% was worth at some point in time. So, okay.
That's the exact right synopsis of it, and the right mindset there. You don't ever want to think like, oh gosh, have I built too valuable a business to ever be sold? You know, that's not the case. But all too often people do build valuable businesses like yours and think the only worthy buyer is a group practice or DSO. And that may be the ultimate outcome of it, but you know, you'd also like to maybe take care of the people who've taken care of you up to this point, your high performing associates. And there are ways to do that too. So I think it may buy you a little bit of time as it relates to that ultimate outcome. Yeah.
Well, any last thoughts, Perrin? How can people get in touch with you if they want to have more questions about this, or, you know, want to talk to you in more serious tone about getting this done for themselves? What would the next step for them be?
Yeah, thank you for that. So our company is called Polaris Healthcare Partners. I can send you all the contact information for the show notes and whatnot, but our website address is polarishealthcarepartners.com. We picked the longest unclaimed URL and found it, I think, with that. My name's Perrin, P-E-R-R-I-N, so my email address is perrin@polarishealthcarepartners.com. We do a lot of consulting, obviously a lot of associate equity models in this type of a space. And there are other sort of educational programs that we have that are for people who are contemplating building a smaller group, you know, that don't need consulting resources, but they're just trying to learn how to run a better business, essentially. And there's some group coaching models and things called the Catalyst Project and the Ascendant Executive that might be worthy of their time too. So happy to share any information about any of that. If people want to reach out or book a call with me off of our website, that can do that. And, you know, really appreciate the friendship and being able to be back with you today and share a little bit of value with your audience.
Well, do some more shorts that pique my interest, and we'll keep bringing you back on, man. It's like, this is like free consulting for me. Why? Well, this is a good gig I got.
Yeah. You, I think you said the same thing. We were talking about valuations and the last time we got together, Tarun. Happy to do it. I mean, you have a very, very valuable business. You also have a myriad of skills that are immediately applicable. And I think that there's probably, we can circle the wagons again at some point in the not too distant future about what's changing in the industry and what the forward look to not only your business, but your audience as well. And I think that's a lot of fun.
I would love to look at doing something like that in the next few months because you know, interest rates, multiples, I hear so many things like competition's less, so they're paying less. There's so much stuff that people want to know about, and I have I'm starting to deal with a lot of people that are in their late 30s, early 40s that still want to work, but want to be like, well, I'm not ready to sell yet, but I also do want to cash in a little bit, and so a lot of people have a lot of questions that I think that it might be timely to contemplate and talk about some of that stuff.
I would echo that. I don't want to wear out your audience with my lovely face and boring voice, but I do think that there's a lot of difference between today and probably when we spoke last year, whenever that was, around valuation, as well as maybe some of the motivations around the businesses that people are building. And I think it's a really, really interesting, compelling time. So I'd welcome the opportunity to talk with you about that at some point. So,
well, Perrin, thank you for being a great friend always. And thank you for coming on the show and sharing your time. I know it's a little bit late, so please enjoy your family, and let's keep helping dentistry move forward.
You bet. My pleasure, Trin. Thank you for your time, too.